This is Brian Kelly for Technology and the Arts. Welcome to a special Technology and the Arts Dialogue podcast, featuring an expanded interview with J.G. Birdsall, writer and director of the upcoming science fiction vidcast, Venus Rises. If you listened to the July 4th Technology and the Arts podcast, you heard highlights of my conversation with Birdsall. In this dialogue podcast, you'll hear him go into more detail about Venus Rises, including information about the cast and the designers helping to turn this dream into a reality. John Lemazny and I will be back with a regular Technology and the Arts podcast next week, July 18th, 2007. But for now, sit back and enjoy this conversation with J.G. Birdsall. Could you start out by stating your name and giving our listeners a little background about yourself?
My name is Jason Birdsall. I'm the writer-director of Venus Rises. I went to school at Full Sail down in Florida. It was a film school. And I'm a video editor by profession.
What got you into filmmaking?
Well, I actually drew comics. I was into comics when I was really young. And I was really into the comic books that continued the storyline over a series. And that's, I started to draw my own, and even from there, I couldn't draw very well. So what I went into actually trying to get my friends to do things. And it's progressed from there. I've always been interested in film as a medium, and the web now more so.
What are some of your influences, especially in terms of science fiction?
Oh, Star Trek, Babylon 5. There's a list of them that I just, even going back to Forbidden Planet, Logan's Run, Day of the Earth Stood Still. I'm influenced by television, by series, by, the idea that when you, as Babylon 5, JMS, he took the risk of making sure his audience was with him for 5 years, that the little things that he put in his storylines that made you scratch your head and wonder, what does this mean? And you won't know until two or three seasons later. He took a bet that the network was going to keep him and that he would have the audience would still hang around for the moment, for when it all comes together. Things like that make me, that they influenced me in the way I wrote Venus Rises as a series, because in a movie, beginning and end, that's really it. And I want people to discover the characters and learn more about them through time. The new Battlestar, even the old Battlestar. I mean, I just like all science fiction and what they had to work with. Firefly, Serenity. Joss Whedon focuses on characters, and there's a history behind them. And that's what I tried to do also with Venus Rises, is each character has a history that you're coming into, that you're coming and seeing them now. But there's a past that leads to who they are now, and there's a future, and there's a story arc that the character is going to develop over time.
Can you tell us about the genesis and evolution of the Venus Rises project?
Venus Rises started out when I was, I kind of got into Lightwave, which is a 3D animation program, and I got into doing little animations here and there with it. And started to release it online and let people see what I was doing. But I wanted more. The little stories that I could do with just ships flying around was at its point where I wanted to do a little bit more with it, which meant trying to get people. And that meant trying to do green screen and things. So I started to look into what avenues I had. And I actually started to write some fan films. Started after a Star Wars fan film. Then I tried to do a Star Trek fan film. But nothing ever panned out. And after a while, I decided, well, why don't I just create something original, something that I create the universe for. And I felt that enticed me more. So I started to pen Venus Rises. And all the whole time, Venus Rises was meant to be on the internet. So the whole structure of the story was kept small in tidbits that I could, at the time, back in 02, the bitrate, download rates, the upload rates were really tiny. So I created little clusters of story that you would be able to download. So, and Venus Rises came out of all that, plus all the current events that were going on at the time. I mean, I kind of just dipped into to a lot of things. I wanted to keep Venus Rises more science fact than science fiction.
The sets you built are pretty ambitious. Can you tell us what went into assembling the parts you needed and constructing the sets?
Well, I went online and did a lot of research looking at what NASA was capable of doing and what they had done, creating the shuttle and the Apollo missions. And I wanted to have it look familiar. I didn't want it to look too high tech. And the story, Earth was made uninhabitable very fast. And the human race had to leave Earth quickly. So they had to use the tried and true method and not really explore new technologies just yet. What went into the sets was a lot of eBay. I tried to get old NASA modules and a lot of military surplus that I could find. A lot of the things didn't work, and when I got them, I had to take them apart and see what I could make light up and what I couldn't make light up. It was a lot of effort to put these sets together. Science fiction, unfortunately, is one of the tougher genres to do because of that, unless you go all green screen. But I like the actors to be physically interactive with something. When the actors have something that they can interact with, it just comes over more real. And, I mean, it's science fiction on a budget, so I wanted to come over as real as it can.
And how long did it take you to acquire the parts for these sets?
The original plan was to have one set up at a time. That would save cost and save space, because I was very limited on my space. That, and I can use the props and things from one set and another set, and make more bang for the buck. But I quickly realized that was not going to work. I had to get all the sets up at once. So I started to take over more of the house and get another location, and was able to get 7 sets up. That took a long time. I mean, I started to pencil out my plans in 2002 when I started to write it. And we didn't have all the sets up till last year.
What can viewers expect out of Venus Rises? Can you give us a brief synopsis?
Venus Rises relates to the situation between the two planets. After Earth was evacuated and Mars was settled, it was more of the higher class. It was more the corporations that got us off of Earth than the government. And the corporations set themselves up on Mars, which set itself up for more of the social elite. Venus then, because Mars needed more raw materials to continue its living arrangements, they moved over to Venus to mine Venus for its ore and mineral, which brought the blue-collar worker. Venus Rises starts off right at about the time that Venus has really had enough. Mars is taxing a lot, increasing the quotas that Venus can't hold to. The workers themselves, they're overworked. They can't fill the quota, which then gets them more behind. Which some of them get injured on the job, possibly, and then there's less of a workforce to fill those increasing quotas. I'm limited by my budget, so it's a smaller story set within the bigger story. So it concentrates on these two guys that are on a space station that orbits Earth, the space station is an important point because neither planet can reach the other without it. Anyone that leaves Mars to get to Venus needs to stop at this station to fuel to get to Venus and back. So you have these two guys that are pretty much in the middle of it, and the story unfolds through our protagonist eyes, Sam's. It's politically charged. Venus Rises is supposed to capitalize on the current events when I was writing it. I mean, who is the bad guy? Was another theme of it. Venus is fighting back because it's got its only option. Mars does what it does because it has an increasing population and it needs the moral materials to keep it going. Who is the enemy? People do what they have to do. There is no good and bad in Venus Rises. There's no Sith. There's no Jedi. There's no black and white. So the idea with Venus Rises was to kind of come back to the solar system. Back in the 50s and 60s, it was a lot of Mars attacks and prehistoric women from Venus type things. But back in that time, they hadn't explored Venus or Mars. About all they did were telescopes. So it left the imagination to run with what could be out there. They didn't know if there were lakes or trees on Venus. They didn't know if there were Martians living underground on Mars. That's why a lot of the stories back then, they kept it close, because they didn't know what was outside the solar system. They didn't know exactly what was going on. So they kept it close to keep the realism, to the audience, to have something for the audience to hold on to relate to. But as time went on and we put our landers on Mars and we had the orbiter and the Russians landed on Venus, the science came and we knew what was there now. So that limited the writer and what he could do, and they stretched out further, and then there was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And now you have a huge canvas to paint on. Warp drive allowed you to, you know, skip across the stars to wherever you wanted to go. So, and it really did pigeonhole the writer into kind of following now what science has told you was fact. You know, there's not going to be water or lakes on Venus. And so what I want to do with Venus Rises, I find science fact more interesting and trying to write within those limitations. But it's not really limitations, because this is what we would have, if we were up there working a 9-to-5 job, we would have to be dealing, it's a dangerous place. I kind of look at it as like the Alaskan fishermen. I mean, they go out, they're far from any civilization, a problem happens, they're on their own. They have the Coast Guard, which is not going to get there. Well, they'll get there soon, but I mean, they're on their own every time they go out. They're putting their lives on the line. And I kind of looked at being out in space in the same regard. I mean, there's really not going to be anyone out to save you. If something goes wrong, you've got to have the tools that you need to survive.
So what is the current status of the project?
Right now, Episode 1 to Series 1 is in post-production. Episode 2 is what we are currently filming. Episodes 3 and 4 are in pre-production. The first Interspace episode is in post-production. And I have other ones later scheduled, but haven't gotten to those yet. It's all about getting the series done, and the Interspaces come later. What the Interspaces are supposed to be, they're shorter stories. What I couldn't tell in the actual Series 1, in my format, I have to squeeze a lot of information in a very short amount of time. So I kind of just take for granted certain things that the audience is going to kind of come along with. In the Interspaces, it explains some of the side notes that how this get here, how they get there. This allows me to dive more into the universe of Venus Rises and how it's all set up. The good news is that the Interspace, the first Interspace, is going to be premiered at Gen Con this year in August. We'll have a trailer for Episode 1 and maybe some behind-the-scenes interviews with actors and crew. As for when the series is actually going to be made available, that I really can't answer. Everybody is a volunteer. They do this on their free time. And when people get busy and their schedules get filled up, VR sort of goes on the back burner. So I'm hoping to have Episode 1 done before the end of the year. But we'll have to see how that works in everyone's schedule.
Can you tell us how long it took you to create Venus Rises? When did you start writing it?
I started back in 2002. I wrote it with the intention of releasing it on the internet, and I wrote it with the limitations that the internet offered at the time. So they were about 20-page scripts cut into two acts, which were 10 pages. And then at the time, I'm guessing that they were going to be about 10 minutes an act to be able to upload to the internet. So I got very ambitious with the story when I originally wrote it. I kind of wrote it without the boundaries set by the internet, and it kind of got a little too big and out of my budget, especially when the sets started to, actually, there were like a dozen sets. Small sets, medium sets, but they were still things I had to build. So I had to cut back. I had to read it and see what I could do, plus actors. I had a very ambitious cast. I think I had eight or nine main characters, not including the side characters, the secondaries. And in all actuality, trying to cast people was not an easy thing. So I had to kind of cut back on the main characters and had to cut back on the story. I had to make it smaller to be able to fit within my budget and within my time restraints. That's why Alex Foster, the Resistance leader, he's kept in a cryobed the whole series. That's just one less character, one less actor I had to try. Because it's hard trying to get everyone's schedules to line up. You got five people that you have X amount of weekends a year, and you have to try to get five people to show up at the same day. And it's not easy. It really isn't that easy. Again, everybody's doing it on their free time. So I try to do what I can do.
how did you go about casting and recruiting volunteers to work on the project?
Well, first off, I actually went to the local acting troops to see if I could find anybody. As soon as they hear it's science fiction, not many people are takers. They think it's going to be cardboard boxes and who knows what else, styrofoam-made sets. So it was very hard to get the initial word out. It really was a friend of a friend of a friend that started to bring people in on it. Even the acting troupe, I got one person, which led to another person. A friend of mine knew somebody, so that led to another person. And then one person would know somebody that we were looking for that kind of fit what we were looking for, that character. And that's how they really came about. We put up audition notices at the local colleges, but again, it really never panned out to anything. It was a very hard process to get this, to get Venus Rises cast. Plus, when you do start off with the cast, people's schedules change, their free time changes, to a point where they, you know, no fault of anyone's, that they just have, they don't have the time to be in the actual series. They don't have the time on the weekends anymore, so which led me to having to recast, which is why building one set at a time didn't work, because when one person left, that set had to be rebuilt and those scenes reshot, which just added to the whole shooting process. All growing pains for the process. But right now, the cast is in it to the end now. We got a good cast. Everybody wants VR to see the light of day, to be on the internet. Well, actually, being a gamer, I had gaming groups and other people were part of, and cosplayers and things, and actually were able to get some, most of the cast really is from that. Annie is a cosplayer. She came in, she's a model actress. Joseph, he plays Nathan. He was a frontman to a band. Damien too, he plays Sam. He was a frontman to a band. Rob, he plays DeMille. He actually is in the film industry too. He owns his own company. He helps me out a lot. He helps me with the camera. That's a good person to bounce ideas off of. He actually does his own horror movies. And Julia, she actually is the owner operator of Rubies of Eventide, role player and one of the first massively multi role player games out there. And Dizzy. Jason Disbrow, he actually went to the same school I graduated for film. He went for digital media. Jason got on the project from one of my cast members that left. Our 3D modelers. Arnon was a friend of Julia's. He's an engineer from Stevens, and he got in on the project, which fit the bill perfectly because of the science fact that I wanted. I want all the ships to not necessarily have doohickeys and gadgets and widgets all placed. I wanted things to actually work and look like the whole ship was thought out. I mean, he approached building Icarus as being an actual CAD design in that regard. So, and Cresshead, he came to us because we had a story done on a sci-fi Australian podcast, Lynn Sci-Fi. And he found it and saw what we were trying to do and was interested enough that he asked if he could be part of it. And these guys have been, again, doing on their spare time, on their free time, helping out with the production of it all.
You mentioned how when you were writing Venus Rises, when you're creating it, you made it fit what was internet-friendly at the time. What do you think of the technologies that now make it possible to have larger video files and allow for distribution to a potentially global audience?
I definitely think the internet is going to be the medium to go to. I think television really is the dodo bird. It's going to go. The internet allows you to get, I mean, the world is your audience at that point. You're not being pigeonholed in anywhere, nor time, what time is the show on. I mean, people kind of watch television now when they feel like it with all the devices they have now. They record it, play it when they have time to watch it. They're not being conformed to watch it at this hour, at this night. The internet fills that need. I really think the internet is the way to go. The networks are moving in that direction. I mean, you're now able to watch whatever the latest show was for the week. They give you a week to watch it before they take and put the next one on. But they know it. They're moving that way too. I have a feeling, though, when they start putting in more rules and regulations about how you're going to be able to distribute video is when the networks are going to get ready to push themselves there, and they're going to want to control the medium. iPods, PSPs, cell phones, these are all other things to be able to encode the video for and to show it. Video on demand. They want to see it, they just download it right onto their cell phone. I have the dailies. When we shoot, I put it on my phone. I do a little raw edit, and there it is on my phone that I can show everybody that they can see and how it looks. And if there's a scene that doesn't really work or the way it's cut, I don't have an angle I need, go in and reshoot. But it's right on the cell phone. Oh, and because of the internet, the story doesn't have to be linear. The interspace pieces actually help to explain things. But you come off onto an interspace to have certain things explained in the episode that were there in the background. You don't know why. You don't know what they meant. The series one is to introduce everyone to the characters, the storyline, the way this universe is set up. And universe, I guess, by solar system. But I can't wait to get to a series two, because that's when the audience has already got the backstory of the character, got who they are. And now there's a lot more going on. The war is broken out between the two planets, and there's just a lot more to dive in and explore.
What do you see in the future for Venus Rises and for yourself?
I wrote Venus Rises, again, like I said, I wrote it like a bigger story. I was going to dip into a series two and a series three. I have the arcs for the characters and for the story itself planned out. I would like to see Venus Rises be picked up enough where I could continue it to a series two and a series three, continue with the characters. I just hope that the fans, the people that watch it, actually enjoy it. I'm a sci-fi fan. I'm writing a sci-fi episodic show, and I'm writing what I would want to see. I mean, television in general, it's hard to find a good series or a story anymore. The stories to try to fit the biggest or get the biggest draw, the biggest demographic, the stories are always watered down, and they just don't make any sense, or they don't make any logical sense. The internet is where stuff's going to be made by fans for fans, and that's where you're going to get the stories and the interesting ideas and the original ideas.
Thank you for tuning in to this special Technology in the Arts Dialogue podcast. I would also like to thank J.G. Birdsall once again for taking the time to do that interview for Technology in the Arts. Remember, John Lemazny and I will be back with a regular Technology in the Arts podcast on Wednesday, July 18th, 2007. Until then, this is Brian Kelly. Take care. The views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily those of guests of the program. Conversely, thoughts and opinions expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily shared by the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.